to another episode of Guest on Emoji Chat, and today we have my almost a brother, I mean non-blood brother, and loving friend Carl Wagner. Thank you for joining, Carl.
Absolutely a pleasure.
You're joining actually from Dallas, correct? Texas.
Yep, Dallas Fort Worth area, in a little town known as Keller.
Keller, yeah. All right, okay. I'm probably gonna have to check that on the map.
German.
Dallas, I can point on the map very, very quickly, but Keller probably gonna have to find a bigger map to point at it.
Yeah.
So, a bit of background maybe on yourself, Carl. I mean, I know you, but I would love for you to present yourself to the audience so they can get to know you better.
Sure. My name is Carl Wagner. I've been in the aerospace industry for 30 plus years, including 18 of them at the Boeing company. I did spend a couple years working with Roberto in supply chain operations in Germany. I currently work as director of supply chain and logistics for Mammoth Freighters, where we are converting 777s from passenger to cargo configuration.
All right. That's a bit of your professional background. I would have loved for you to say that you're the most huggable person in the world. That's part of your personal abilities.
It is a superpower. I have long arms and very soft, yes.
Exactly. Tested that myself in my flesh. So obviously the idea of Emoji Chat is like the audience is getting to know, kind of like a loose chat, just normal two individuals, in this case two guys, just discussing about topics that we find interesting, important, or applicable to anything. But one of the customs that I'm trying to introduce as a kind of what you call like a structure into the podcast is that if we talk about a topic, I want the audience to be on the same page than we are, right? So if, for example, you proposed a very technical topic for today, which is called liminal spaces, so I would like the audience, before we start deep diving into the topic and why is it important, what is liminal spaces, Carl?
Yeah, so liminality refers to the spaces when you're between two kind of major events or modalities or stages of life. Like right now I'm in transitioning from having a child living in the house to being an empty nester. That's kind of an area of liminality. Another one for me was, transitioning to Germany, transitioning back from Germany. Any of those transitional spaces is a kind of a liminal space, and it's not always the easiest to navigate.
All right. Thank you for that explanation. I actually, I was aware of the topic, but I had to do a little bit of a investigation to catch up with your expertise and wisdom here. No, but I found it quite interesting as well. And now that we, the audience is with us, what we talk when we say liminality or liminal spaces, what is it that we mean? Like that in between spaces? It's kind of like the Stranger Things, right? Like it's like the in between worlds, like. No, actually, because they go
upside down.
On the portals. Yeah, it's on the upside down, but it will be the portals. Will be the in between. That will be the liminal spaces. So why do you think that liminal spaces is an important topic to discuss?
It's important because it's probably the most frequent thing that occurs in business today, because we don't. 20, 30 years ago, it used to be you would come work for a company, you'd kind of be in that same company for many, many years, and you wouldn't transition a whole lot. But it was always there. We're transitioning from one project to another. We have friends that come in and out of our lives. We have bosses that come in and out of our lives. And that requires a certain amount of resilience, and it's I'd say the transitions are very similar to the grieving process, that there is the, first there's the denial that it's happening, and then there's the negotiating about, well, maybe this isn't really gonna be happening, and then there's, the acceptance and moving on with it. And maybe there's different ways to conceptualize it, but there definitely is an element of that feeling of loss, especially if you're transitioning from something that you really enjoyed. And the reason I thought of it when you asked was, there was that feeling of loss when I had to leave Germany, for many reasons. But there's also, there's transitions, when you're like hoping for something and it doesn't it's not realized, and you have to pivot to do something else, and there's that feeling that there's one of my favorite comedians, Stephen Wright, talks about. He says, you know that feeling when you're sitting in a chair and you lean back on two legs just before it's about to tip over? I feel like that all the time. And that's what, and those liminal spaces can feel that way, because it's definitely not comfortable. You don't know if you're going to land on your back or your face. And it's learning to kind of accept that and embrace that. And I had a cognitive behavioral therapist that I've worked with that said, do you believe that at the end it's going to be okay? And I'm like, sure, yeah, I think it's going to be okay. And he's like, well, then why do you think we fight against that liminal space so much? Because we know it's going to be okay. Why don't you go ahead and be okay with it now instead of fighting it all the way through the process? And that was really an epiphany for me, that it's inevitable. So what are the mechanisms and rituals that we can engage in our lives to be able to navigate that okay?
One of the things that I found when interacting with people about liminal spaces or that in between in changes is that they have this negative notion of it, right? Like, so would you say that a liminal space or a transition period or space, is it negative? Is it positive? What's your thoughts on that?
The older I get, the more I try not to conceptualize something as positive or negative. I look at it more as like a physics problem, that it might require more of my energy to as an input in order to get where I need to go. And so for me, those challenging times or times when it requires more of my energy and focus, and then those, the lower energy states are where I'm in the flow and things are going smoothly. But I try not to view them as positive or negative. I mean, that it, and I, and of course that's easy to say, right? Like death in the family, hard to like conceptualize that as like a positive event. But those things are also inevitable, and us conceptualizing them as negative doesn't really help us navigate it. So if we can grasp it and see it as a challenge and something that is for our own growth, then we can conceptualize it more positively. It doesn't always necessarily make it easier, but at least I tend to be kind of a on balance a very positive person towards things, and there's other people that are like, oh, you're positive about everything, and you're always so like encouraging to your team and stuff, and I say it, and I'm like, if I don't at least believe that things can get better, they're not going to get better.
Of course.
If I'm just gonna sit in the challenge and say, oh, it's so tough and all this, then I don't even have a fighting chance when I put myself into that orientation of letting it defeat me. So.
Yeah, it's the law of manifestation and reciprocity. At the end, you know, the universe kind of spits back what you give it, right? So if you give it negative, it's obviously going to manifest as negative at the end of the day. All right, I like that. I like that how you put it, because maybe we don't have to force it into feeling like it's positive, but there is no real, you know, the way I see it, there's no a real need to label it either way, right? It might just be it, right? You know, it is what it is. So it doesn't have to be negative or positive.
And you don't, I think, you know, people that tend to be more pessimistically oriented find, believe that you're being like an ostrich and you're sticking your head in the ground and you're not being realistic about the situation. And I think that's easy to characterize it that way. But I don't think that being positive means that you're not realistic about the situation. You're not trying to, take any, delegitimize someone's feelings about it. Mm-hmm. But you are choosing to find the positive in it and try to orient yourself towards that and try to walk your way out of it. Because it is a, you know, I think for a long time I did tend to do that, not acknowledge that it really, like, it's really challenging. It really mm-hmm. stinks right now. It's okay to acknowledge that. You just don't have to live there.
Yeah, but one thing, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. A challenging time doesn't have to be necessarily negative. You can have a challenge that is positive. Right. And I believe very strongly in that. Like at the end of the day, things don't have to be either negative or positive. They're actually what you make them to be. It's not about living in a Yuppie world where everything that happens, you know, you're being punched in the face. It's like, yeah, I'm happy about it. No, you know, you don't have to be happy about it. But
singing the happy Lego talking about everything is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, there is this psychologist I forgot his name, man. In the Holocaust, Frank.
Frankl.
Yeah, Viktor Frank. Thank you. And obviously he never in his autobiography and then what he taught afterward in therapy, he never really considered being part of the Holocaust positive in any sense. It's not like he was enjoying the fact that he was there.
But, that was great.
Yeah, it was awesome. We're being killed. But it's not the point of, hey, I'm going to take everything as a happy end. No, but at the end of the day, is what he made out of that experience that turned it into positive. Not the actual fact that it's ongoing, like when you're going through the death of a family member, when you're going through a disability diagnosis, you know, getting laid off your work, you know, whatever the traumatic experience is, you know, PTSD, whatever it is, it's not like about, hey, I'm happy the way I am because, you know, I'm going through challenges. No, it's not about that. But what is it that you're going to make of it that is really going to turn it into negative or positive, I think?
Correct. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree there. Yep.
So I wanna ask you, because I was while I was deep diving into liminal spaces, and you challenged my knowledge on the concept itself. So thank you very much. There is something that is linked with a Carl Jung idea or principle, which is the principle of individuation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he mentions, I found it quite interesting, because I'll explain why I found it quite interesting and then we'll flip it around. Because what he says, that he describes individuation as the, you know, the process of identifying yourself as a distinct part of a whole, like you're kind of finding yourself in the vast ocean of everything, right? So what are your thoughts of that? How does that suit the concept of liminality?
I mean, I'm definitely lean more towards Jungian than Nietzschean philosophy for sure. And it is it is conceptualized differently within different cultures, right? One of the classes that I took before I moved to Italy the first time was on understanding how Americans are oriented versus Italians or Japanese on a scale of individualism versus collectivism. And Americans tend to be really individualistic. And so when I got to Italy, they tend to be more collectivistic, not as far, I wouldn't say, to the right as some Asian cultures, but they're very they like to do a lot of stuff together. They would never, like, doing lean workshops was really tough because they didn't want to point out a person's as being part of the problem, right? I'm like, no, we're not. This isn't. They're not punishing them. We did, but we do need to know where the issues are.
It's not the
Oh,
problem. It's not the
not just
problem.
Giuseppe's a good man. So that that individual expression, I think, is still necessary to understand where, even if you're in a collectivistic society, understand where you kind of fit in there. And understand that it doesn't all, there's so many vectors that contribute to who you are as an individual, and everybody you meet along the way and all the experiences that you have are part of what constructs you as a unique individual. And I think, I don't know, there's as much variation within the categories that we assign to different people groups and genders and cultures and all of that than there are between those different categories. So but that orienting yourself and realizing that there's so much that you don't have control over, that the one thing you do have control over is how you orient yourself towards that and how you navigate through the world and the way the touch points that you're allowed to have with people, can you help them on their journey as well, right?
I love that. I love that, man. Especially because a lot of our young people, I think it's quite challenging for them, right? Because like you said, that there
Oh yeah,
are.
I wouldn't want to be a kid today. I don't know how they
It's
get through it.
over for us, man.
Just from a
But.
mental health standpoint, it's just when I was a kid, I didn't get 500, people telling me my head was too big for my body, or
Yeah,
just all that
exactly.
instant negative stuff. I'm like, I had three buddies, and they're good friends, and they would tell me if I had a booger on my lip or something like that.
Yes.
Just that constant, well, and not even the negative input, it's the overwhelming flood of how perfect everybody's life is on social media, and this, like, well, what's wrong with me that I don't, I can't get up at 4 a.m. and do 100 push-ups, and why don't I have a side hustle, and all this just constant, in addition to your own inner dialogue, you got this external dialogue that's constantly just like a stream of just garbage.
It's tiring, man. I mean, the way
It
if I
is.
think about it's like mentally exhausting. It has to be, because I mean, I only have one person now telling me that my head is too big for my body. That's my wife, and that's all I have to
Just
worry about, you know.
yeah.
Exactly. There's only one channel of communication that I need to manage.
Well, and I the one thing I wish that everyone could realize is that And it was my favorite quote by C.S. Lewis was that you've never met an ordinary person. Everybody has some unique spark of the image of God, and it's only they can reflect in that way. And so I think that's why I enjoy meeting different people, and rather than miss all of the people that I can't be with right now, I relish the fact that I got to even experience them once, right?
That's awesome, man. That is an awesome concept, because at the end, I think it has to be with the, like Joe Dispenza calls them, the higher feelings, right? Like gratitude. Like you could always it's what you make them to be, what we were discussing before. You can always say, oh no, I missed them, I can't have them, but then you chose to actually take on what, the gratitude of, hey, at least I spent some time with them. Like I got the opportunity to be with them. So that's an awesome feeling. I
And
think that
even
it
even before,
elevates.
and even people that you might have had an unpleasant interaction with, they still you learn something from them. Especially if you ever catch yourself acting like that, and you then you're much more sensitive to, man, I should not say stuff like that. That really hurts when people say that to me.
Yeah, but that is curious, because a lot of people forget that, you have that emotional intelligence ability to stop yourself, because I've experienced, conversations with you, so I know this firsthand. But a lot of people, I think they need to really realize how important it is to be aware of someone's feeling. As a matter of fact, I'm putting together a very cool workshop on alexithymia, which is the inability of understanding your own feelings on your feelings of the people and your surrounding, right? And then we'll talk about that more in the future. I think I would love to meet you again and discuss on that. But going back to the youth, I think the youth, they create wrong expectations on how the world, works really, because they've got all these million labels that they need to choose from, where they fit best. Yeah. So in your experience, since you've gone through those transition periods, and they're massive, right? Because I remember, me myself going through those transitions of moving back and forth from America, from the UK, from other countries of work. What, in your experience, what are the two or three tips that you think, look, maybe I did this right, or maybe I did this wrong, but I realized I could have done this in a different way. What are the two or three tips that you will share with both business people and then daily life type people, but maybe kind of thinking on the youth? But what are the two or three tips that you think, if you guys do this will be a lot, it'll go smoother?
That's an excellent question. It's hard to distill, because I did the over and back two different times, and two totally different sets of circumstances. The challenges were way different.
So while you think that, you will say that the environment determines the actions as well, you think, in this
Oh,
sense.
stage of life. And when I moved to Italy, my son was still in school. He was 10 years old, and he had to, and so he went to Italian public school and learned Italian and was really immersed in it. And then we and but it, we knew it would be temporary, and we kept our house in the States, and Boeing paid for all of our housing and stuff in Italy, and then they moved us back. And so there was a little bit more of a little less risk, I would
All
say.
right.
Even though if when you take overseas assignments with Boeing, they don't guarantee you a position when you come back. They will move you back, but they don't guarantee that there'll be a position for you when you come back, which is crazy to even think that they would do that. And then then when I moved over, my son was out of high school and COVID was going on. So nothing was normal about any of it. And then my wife was had some health problems, and it was a startup. And I was leaving my, my quote unquote secure job with Boeing to go join a startup. A lot of apparent risk. So much different set of circumstances.
So maybe we can focus on that environment, right? Maybe when you think of the tips, maybe we can focus on that higher risky environment. Because I think our people nowadays, we live in an ever increasing world of risk. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another dimension along which people differ is their tolerance for risk.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could remember what the name of the book is. It's really good. Give me one sec.
No problems.
Got it on my Kindle app here. It's about the mind-body connection, but The Mindful Body by Ellen Langer.
Okay.
And she worked at Harvard, and she was doing a lot of research on health outcomes based on how people thought about what they were doing. But she talks about risk in there, and that oftentimes we perceive this risk, and the risk is only speculative, mm-hmm. right? Because there's no way we could know how it would turn out the other way, right? There's no way I could know for sure what would happen if I hadn't gone to Germany. There's no way I could know what would happen if I hadn't gone to Italy. So the risk is totally made up in your head, right? So, and she also talks a lot about that. Most of the time we apprehend what the right decision is right out of the gate. And then we have to kind of build a bunch of justifications around what we knew was the right thing to do to begin with. So I found that to be absolutely true in both of the times that I went. And I would say that they were both difficult going over and coming back. I think the Germany one was much harder and more, and because it involved both really stressful career and personal situations that were all wrapped around this thing. But they were both, my wife and I both felt it was absolutely the right thing to do. And so, you probably don't remember this, but in my kind of parting missive to the people at our employer, one of my things is you don't judge the quality of the success of an engagement based on the outcome, because there's so many things that you don't have control over that result in a certain outcome. So if you conceptualize it that the outcome is the thing, then you can absolutely say that was a horrible engagement, that was a bad decision, all of these things. And if you realize that you're always working with imperfect knowledge, risk is only a perceived thing.
Mm-hmm.
All you can do is make the best decision in the moment and what you feel is right. And I think we all have an inner compass that if we just listen to it, we would know what's best for us. And that is what, and it isn't the same for everybody. So I would say, yeah, don't judge the quality of a move based on the outcome. And just get rid of a lot of crap, right? Because every time I moved, I'm like, I got way too much stuff, and I've never looked. I haven't looked at half of this stuff. So learning, that's what I learned over two international moves was, man, just be ruthless about getting rid of stuff, because it's all just stuff. I refuse to take, and you can talk to the people that work for me when like vendors come out and they're always trying to give us these tchotchkes and stuff. I'm like, do not put that on my desk. I do not want it. If you want it, fine, but I do not need another stress ball. I don't need a sticky pad. I don't need anything. Stop giving me that stuff. So travel light, I guess that would be the other thing I learned. Because really, and this, I think this goes back to the, I'm not sure who said it. I want to say it's MLK, but I don't recall for sure, but it's that, very few people will remember the things you did, but everyone will remember how you made them feel. And so I found that to be true everywhere I've gone. I always remember all of the people and how they made me feel. And that's kind of a loose term. Nobody can make you feel anyway, but how I felt around the person and the way that the energy they gave off, I treasure all those things. So as you're going through those things, remember that everyone's going to remember how you made them feel. And that's, everyone's going through that same thing. Everyone's fighting a battle you don't know anything about. And if you've helped, make their day a little brighter, if you've encouraged them a little bit, that's a wonderful way to go through the world. Even if you're correcting them, right? There's ways to correct and encourage and stuff that doesn't require the tearing down of that person.
Absolutely, man. I absolutely agree. And I think businesses, even leaders that go through these understandings, like theoretical understandings, they believe that it's like, it's outside the business world. This is like psychological stuff, like, day-to-day self-development, mental. But the point is that we, now more than ever, business is about change, constant change. And that creates this environment of ambiguity. And ambiguity can be very uncomfortable for a lot of people. So the more I think that the businesses that hopefully a lot of business leaders will listen to these podcasts and your three tips, the more that they practice that in their work environment, the more that they will, they'll be able to engage the teams around them. I love that concept because I made that, systemically part of the nuclear leader model, right? Where the leader has to become the calibrator, and it has to become the calibrator in every sense, not just on strategics and goals and processes and systems, but also emotionally at a personal level. Like you said, we don't know the story behind it, but we're all people. We're all people working for a company, working for a project, and we can't stop being people. It's not like all of a sudden I go into a new project like you go. It's not like you went into the startup project and you stopped being Carl and you were just a supply chain operations manager. You can't do that. You're still Carl in a sense. And leaders need to understand that unless you're able to connect with these people at the right level, you're never going to bring them into full engagement.
Right. Yeah. In my most recent role, the one thing that I try to kind of not drive home, but, help them understand is that the concept that you're talking about that they don't stop being who they are when they come in. And that, I said, well, you might want more, more discreet instructions from me, but I don't want to be prescriptive like that, because you probably will come up with something better because you've thought of it and it aligns with who you are and the way you do things, and we'll still get there and you'll feel a whole lot better about it and you'll grow along the way. But I really try to make it about the people, because if you build them up, then it's amazing, and you expect great things of them, they'll often outpace what you expect even.
Yes, indeed. I'm a strong believer of that, man. So going back to liminality, right? And it really is part of the day-to-day work environment, day-to-day life. And it usually comes either in the most unexpected of situations or times. But you know, we're all going through transitions. Sometimes those transitions are, you know, bigger than others. You know, some of those occur naturally, like you're going into adolescence. And mm-hmm. and the fact that you're no longer a child and now you have to deal with adolescence and the biological hormonal change and the growth and now you find yourself trying to identify who you are in a world, all those changes are challenging and mm-hmm. and they're important. But when I was reading about this Jungian principle of individuation, I thought, look, I actually remember going through when I was going through my own emotional recovery therapy, and I was doing this with my mentor. Part of the process was kind of the reverse individuation, because in a sense, I have built this ego of this persona of who I was, and it was mm-hmm. all about specialization. It was all about I'm deep, you know, my problems are bigger I'm worse than everybody, and then you know I kind of had created this persona of I'm alone in the world, right. Nobody else can understand me. And then the process that my mentor took me through was quite the opposite of, you know, it was still a liminal space. It was about liminality because it was a transition, but that unknown was the other way around. Instead of trying to identify myself, like Carl Jung mentions on the liminal space, individuation, I was actually trying to identify me as part of the whole. Because right. I had separated myself so far away from my understanding that I am connected everywhere I go, that I felt alone. So for me, that concept was quite interesting. And how do you think if we were to apply this to the work environment, how do you think that this concept will match with strategic deployment, right? A project strategic deployment.
Say a little bit more. I'm not connecting them.
It was my reverse individuation. So it was about me being part now of a whole. That was my transition back into kind of calibrated emotional serenity, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of feeling myself so separated from everything. But then something that I've you know, that was for me my experience in my life, and I know it works for other people because I've helped other people as a mentor to go through this. But mm-hmm. what do you think, you know, is that, you know, maybe the first question is, do you think that will be applicable for the work environment? And if it is, how would it be?
Oh, it's absolutely applicable because, you know, although we bring in our individual makeup, we still have to figure out how to integrate that into our team. And as leaders, we have to be the ones that set the culture for that. And if you can set a culture of embracing people's, for lack of a better word, weirdness, right? I have my own weirdness, you've got your own. But together we make a beautiful mess, right? And we can achieve some really great things. I think for me, it's about creating that safety for my people to know that I'm going to provide top cover for them. And if there's a bunch of, you know, whirlwind going on in the leadership team and a bunch of pecking on me, but if I can protect them and let them do the important things that they need to do that really keep the organization running, that creates safety and lets them execute to the best of their capabilities, right? Because if they're worried about not being accepted, you know, that people think, you know, if they feel shunned or that people think they're odd or that their mm-hmm. voice is important, then you're going to get less of them. You're either going to get less of their contribution. But it is a lot harder. it's a lot more work as a leader to operate that way, because it's easy to do command and control and just set up, set out a bunch of proscriptions and here's how you'll act and here's the things you're going to do and here's how you're going to do them, than it is, embracing a lot of different ways of doing things that aren't the way I necessarily would do them. But the net effect to me has always been far superior to what I could have ginned up in my limited thinking and my limited perspective on the problem.
Awesome, man. Thank you. That's a fantastic way of managing. It sounds like a great team if I do work for you, man. Sounds like a fantastic place.
I would be sunk because I went from being an individual contributor to being a director, and so in some ways I feel like I kind of skipped a level. In retrospect of my career, I was always acting as a manager most of the time. I just didn't have that last component of having to sign their time and all that kind of stuff. But director is a way different, it's a different modality of interaction, and I'm dealing with the people that are very demanding, and they have a lot on the line, quite frankly, right? And we're dealing with you dealing with investors and that kind of thing, and it's a different kabuki mask you have to put on for those meetings than when you're talking with your team. But I think at first I was just trying to get to know everybody, but then, and I still do try to interact with everybody, the next level down of people, because I find them all very interesting and fascinating. It's not a huge team, anyways, but where I try to spend most of my development effort is in my managers for their functions and getting them what they need. So it's been a bit of it's another liminal space for me, learning how to develop to and I'm not there yet. I'm still in that liminal space of learning who I am as in this context, and learning to, because I do love technical things, and I really do love kind of digging down into the details, and that's not really where my value lies in this position. It's keeping an organization together and developing an organization. It wasn't, it really was pretty nascent when I took it over, and I still have a long ways to go to get it from, getting our type cert to, building multiple units over the year. So I still a pretty big hill to climb.
And
But
that's the fun
yeah,
part, man. That's the
fantastic
fun
team. I
part.
can't say enough. What's that?
That's the fun part, the hill to
Yeah,
climb.
but I'm fortunate that I got some fantastic leaders on my team, so they make my job easier for sure. But they're challenging, because they should be, right? That I don't want people that are just Easter bunnies. I want them to challenge me on something and agitate if they need something. And but I always want them to know that I got their back, and we're gonna do this together. And they've been very welcoming, and so I'm very blessed from that perspective.
That's awesome, man. Well, I think you're a living example that you can be a great leader at executive level without we have you know without having to go through the career path, right? And for me, that's a teaching, right? Because there is this book by Stuart Avery called Ping, A Frog in Search of a New Pond. And one of the principles I love that Stuart goes through is that life is like a teacher, right? And he goes through this concept of you always find your teacher, your master, when you're ready as a student. In a sense, you've been preparing yourself to be the great executive leader that you are now, regardless of your career path. So I think for me, it's encouraging to see people like you get to that level, and maybe for the young generation going through this path, there is You know, if there's a saying in Spanish that goes like every road leads to Rome, right? In a sense, there's not one way to make it. There's not one way to go through something. And for me, for example, you're an example of that. You know, you went from individual contributor directly into a director executive leadership position. And you're doing a fantastic job, even though it's still a hill to climb.
Right. And it was really, you know, it was like you said, it was a result of, you know, all of the things that brought me into here that I could have never foreseen. You know, I was perfectly willing to just kind of ride out my days at Boeing. And if that was the way it was going to turn out, that was the way it was going to turn out. And I was glad I had taken a risk and gone to Europe, and it hadn't worked out, and that's okay. You know, and it just the striving is the thing, not the result. Because there's so many things that can happen to keep you from what you think is your dream. And that's what one of my other favorite guys that I like listening to is Chris Voss. He was the lead hostage negotiator for the FBI for international kidnappings. And he taught negotiation at USC. Fight on. he had this great saying of never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better, right? And I'm like, man, I never really thought about it that way, right?
So clearly.
Yeah, so this was, I mean, the position that was offered to me was from someone I had worked for in a totally different context 23 years ago. And he'd been, we kind of reconnected on LinkedIn, and he was doing different things. And, but I think it feels like it was one of those things that he remembered how he felt around me, and how, you know, when people remember you in a positive way, and they remember, I mean, I was working as a punk kid designer / liaison engineer for him, and you know, and the fact that he still thought that highly of me, and kind of, I mean, obviously he also saw my credentials, you know, I was the things that I'd done and all these things, but then for him to put those two together and say, hey, just out of the blue, would you come up and interview for this job? I'm just like, I could never ever have predicted it. I couldn't. It was so nonlinear in the trajectory, and truly, I don't know, for the Doctor Who fans out there, he always talks about these necessary like fixed points in time of things that have to happen. So I was looking, I was like, man, I had to go to Germany. It had to be hard, and I had to meet the people that I met. Because meeting people like you and Sushri, who you had on one of your other podcasts, and just all the really wonderful people I met, grew me in different ways and really prepared me for this role. As I was walking around during the kind of interview process, I was like, man, all of the weird kind of quirky things that I've done and have occurred in my career just really positioned me perfectly to do this work. Maybe I haven't been an executive before, but I'm a really great fit for this, and I can do this. And because I have always been oriented towards people, I love developing people. Exactly. And I've tried to develop people even when it wasn't my job. And so I'm like, man, now I can really put this to use, and I can, you know, so the last couple of years have been me kind of, you know, engaging things that I've learned, but then also applying things that I said I believed. I'll give you a good, for instance, when, and this applies to liminal spaces, and this applies to when you like liminal space where you feel stuck. Because I was talking to the behavioral therapist about this thing, because he's asking me, now that you've kind of gone through this, what did you learn? And I said, well, one of the things I learned is that I kind of had to put my money where my mouth was, because I was in a difficult situation, and I and And I have a lot of people come to me when they get into like a career valley, and they're like, how do I get out of this? And I thought I was going to do this thing. It didn't work out. And now I feel like I'm stuck. And so I'm like, well, here's an opportunity for me to engage all these things I've been telling people to do when they feel stuck. And the number one thing I tell people when they get stuck is find someone to help. Find someone else to help. If you find someone else to help, go volunteer at a soup kitchen. Go, like one time I volunteered to help refugee kids in high that were in high school, like tutoring and stuff. I mean, I've made some just wonderful relationships with that, and it got my eyes off of me. And then I stopped thinking about my problem so much, and then it breaks loose, right? It somehow it feels like it's part of the DNA of how God's structured and ordered the universe to that there's that, you know, that you're not supposed to be thinking about yourself all the time. You are part of a whole. There are other people you can help. And so that's one of the, you know, that that's one that's to me that unlocks liminal space a lot is when you can look and help someone else. And when we were working together in Germany, things weren't quite going the way I wanted them to, but I was able to then say, but there's young kids here that are early in their career. I could talk to them and help encourage them and help them think about, you know, and it got my mind off of me and about my, who cares about me, right? These people are important. And when you can get your mind off of yourself, sometimes it'll unlock those things in your life. I
Well,
don't know where I
thank you,
was going
man.
with that, but that's an
That be
important.
no,
That
I
was
think you
one thing
went.
I said about
No,
liminal
you
space.
went straight to the point. You went. I think as a wrap up is fantastic. You know, we talk about liminal spaces in the those places of transition. How do you get unstuck? Is find somebody to help. I think that's just the beautiful quote. So I'm gonna put you on the wall. There's I gotta fill a wall of quotes, and that probably is gonna be one of the first ones to go up there. So thank you, Carl, for your time and your wisdom and sharing
Been
some of
pleasure.
that. Yeah, it was
You know, I
fantastic
always
having
enjoy
you.
talking. So,
Indeed. Same here, my brother.
no,
So
I'm. You know, I'm always going to be a big fan of yours. I think you're putting good things into the world, and you're making the world a little better place. So, thanks for doing what you do, man.
thank you, man. Just trying. Thank you.